Seattle's Morning News. AAA says the average price for a gallon of regular in the Seattle metro region today is up another 6 cents from yesterday, $5.22 a gallon. That's another record. And one state lawmaker has a proposal for some relief. Let's go live now to Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Dave. Yes, Republican leader John Braun in the Senate, he has a plan for some tax relief for Washingtonians.
I'm once again calling for a rebate on the gas tax through the end of the year to give working families around the state some relief in response to the huge increases in gas prices we've seen over the last year, and in particular in the last month, and broadly the pressures they're feeling from inflation on all kinds of things.
Gas prices, by the way, up over 30 cents. I think it's 34 cents, if I'm not mistaken, just month over month. So Braun says he's hearing from people who are really struggling out there because of the gas prices and more.
Pretty rough, and it's pretty hard on working families, especially folks who are living either in the suburbs or in the rural area and driving into work, because that's where they can afford to live, and they have to commute for work.
It's not the first time in recent months that Braun has suggested this for relief.
We've called for it during session, of course. That would have been the right time to do it. I called for it last time we had a revenue report, and we had one Friday, and it showed once again that revenues continue to come in above the projection, so we have some additional money. We could afford to do this. It's not a situation where we're going to shortchange transportation funding or shortchange any services paid for by the operating budget. We have extra funds that we could divert to cover this rebate through the end of the year. I think it's the right thing to do for the people around the state of Washington. They're having, frankly, a tough time.
That dollar amount, by the way, of better than expected revenue from Friday's report for the May report, $428 million better than expected compared to the February report. So, again, still going up quite significantly. And he says that puts the state in even better shape to do this kind of relief now than the last time he asked.
Every time revenue comes in higher than expected, we're in even better shape. Why don't we reconsider this? Because the state keeps doing better and better, but the people keep getting hurt more and more by higher gas prices and, frankly, higher prices on everything. So the arguments have been, oh, it will impact services. That's not true. Or it'll impact our debt rating. That's not true. Or we won't have enough funding for transportation. That's not true. Or some have claimed somehow it'll help the oil companies. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of our tax law. It will help people. So all the claims that it won't work are just not accurate. And in fact, we have Democrats in other states around the country who are calling for exactly this. This is just some sort of ideological bent by the current majority.
He hasn't had any bites on this latest push from on the gas tax relief from the majority, but he's not surprised, he says, given the lack of really any support for broad tax relief all of last session.
There was very little. In fact, there was no appetite in the end. Yeah. Little one for small businesses that looked like a big cut, but it really wasn't. It didn't affect many people around the state. It certainly wasn't broad tax relief that would put money back in people's pocket they could use to pay the rent or pay for food or housing. So nothing has been done so far that could help regular people around the state. And we should. And we can do this easily. We proved in the last 2 years we can come in and we can do work virtually. We could do this in a special session, frankly, in a couple hours if we worked it ahead of time.
And he says not only is nothing really being done, it's not even really being discussed.
That's my frustration. And I'm promoting this, taking this as an opportunity to promote the rebate for the gas tax. But there are other ways we could get money back in people's pockets. We should just be thinking about it and working on how do we do that. Help people out. It doesn't have to be a ton, but every little bit helps for people who are just barely making it.
Now, he worries that the lack of appetite on this, specifically the gas tax rebates, is driven by the push to get people out of their cars.
I certainly think there's some of this. It's kind of ideological. We don't like, gas, combustion-driven engines. We want to force that. So I think that's it with some folks, and I think they don't realize that. And I'm not opposed to making that transition over time, but we can't do it today, and people have to pay their grocery bill today. So let's make it a little easier for people in the near term and have a longer term plan to make that transition.
Now, he does point out it's a little bit bipartisan because we had in Congress a Democrat, Kim Schreier, who introduced her own gas tax suspension for a proposal for relief some months ago. Braun hopes lawmakers here in our state at the legislator level realize that there needs to be urgency on this issue.
We're literally making it unaffordable to live in the state of Washington for real people around the state right now. If you could just barely afford, you know, to pay your rent and buy groceries for your family, and, you know, and fill up your car 6 months ago, you probably can't afford to do it right now. It's that bad. And it's the people who are, you know, in the toughest times that are having the most trouble. Inflation is regressive. It's an automatic tax, especially on people who are already on tough times.
Now, I did reach out to Democratic budget writers for their response to this push. Again, I did not hear back in time for this story, but I can tell you that the lead budget writer in the Senate, Democrat Christine Rolfes, had told me earlier in the year that inflation was the problem, right? We're entering a time of inflation, which means everything that state government has to buy is also more expensive, so they need to save. Otherwise, we're going to end up back in a recession or somewhere where they have to make cuts.
Have you heard any Democrats say that, in fact, they like to see higher gas prices because it keeps people out of their cars?
I have not heard that. That is, you know, certainly over the years, I've heard that message kind of behind closed doors. But no, certainly nothing as of late.
Even if you took away the state gas tax, you'd still be over, what, $5 a gallon in some places?
Our gas tax is 49. It's just under 50 cents.
So if you're still driving at $5 a gallon, you don't have a choice, right?
Right. Hard, though. I'm surprised by the lack of any real public discussion by our state elected leaders with housing costs where they are, with gas prices just ridiculous, and with overall inflation. I mean, the grocery store trips are out of control. They're so expensive. And not everyone in the state, it's not sustainable for everybody in the state. That's just a fact. So I would at least think there would be some more public discussion of some kind going on.
Yeah. Well, let us know when that happens.
Yeah, I will. Because it doesn't look like these gas prices, they were 36 cents since yesterday. I believe I did the math earlier. It was like 20 something cents from a week ago and then 34 cents from a month ago. If we hit $6.
Tomorrow could be the day because we're darn close now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
All right.
Courageous Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
It's time for your daily dose of kindness, sponsored by Heritage Homecraft. At a Cranston, Rhode Island pizza place, co-workers are more like family.
It's been difficult. However, the Big Cheese works with us no matter what. I mean, with my schedule.
That's Jennifer, a single mom of two and a waitress. She tells WJAR-TV that finding time to take care of the kids and bring an income, it hasn't been easy. She says she was recently having a rough day. And thankfully, she got some good customers.
My first table of the day was super, super nice gentleman with his wife.
She said the man and woman ordered some sandwiches. They ate, they paid, they got up to leave.
The gentleman looked over his shoulder and he said, bye, have a nice day.
Have a nice day. And while cleaning the table, she couldn't believe what she saw. Telling her manager, Kim Tierney.
She was like, Kim, someone left me a $600 tip. And I was like, Jen, stop. And I kind of pulled the paper out. I said, well, I have better news for you. It's not $600. It's an $800 tip. I said, so see? And she was like, I'm going to pass out. I'm going to faint.
She never got the couple's names, but said in her 20 years of working in the restaurant industry, she has never received a tip like that. But the act of kindness is something she will never forget.
I just want to say thank you so much. It meant a lot. The money is very, very much appreciative. It helps out no matter what. However, the kindness behind it and making my day from going a little hectic to that kind of a tip made me smile the rest of the day.
It makes a difference in someone's life. It goes a long way, and so you never know what someone's going through.
With that generous tip, she bought her daughter a new pair of shoes, her son a toy police truck, and she says she'll be paying off some bills with the extra money.
Nice surprise. 7:47 now from the G and Ursula show, which starts at 9. Here's G Scott. Colleen, clue G in on the Mexican pizza.
Well, I just...
What happened?
I'm not like a huge Taco Bell, you know, it's been in my life since childhood.
Right.
But then I noticed all of this campaigning going on to bring the Mexican pizza back, and I thought, I must have missed out on something. I never ate one of those, but they're back now, and Doja Cat, that singer, pop, you know, rap pop star, she made a big deal out of it. Coachella, Dolly Parton's going to sing a song about it.
You should at least describe for people who don't know what a Mexican pizza is.
Okay, well, I had to look at it myself. So it's like two flat tortillas, right? Just crispy, and you have the ground beef in the middle, and then on top it looks like some enchilada sauce with some lettuce, tomato, cheese, sour cream.
Is it ground beef in the middle?
little TVP in there. Little textured vegetable protein as well.
Well, there's two. Look, Jack in the Box and Taco Bell, nobody advertises the way they do. For some reason, it just pops to me on the TV screen. Mm-hmm. Maybe because as far as the Taco Bell, anything they have new, it looks amazing. I'm just jealous.
It looks bizarre, though. Anything they're always like, we spiced it with Doritos, and then we put chicken and beef in it, and they just stack.
But Taco Bell has gained our trust, because you know it's going to be good.
On the way in.
But something happened after a certain age, so I can't have the Taco Bell
anymore.
So you want the Taco Bell.
Do I? Yes, absolutely. I want it after 10 o'clock at night.
When I was pregnant with June, Taco Bell came back into my life in a real way.
Was it a good time?
It was a good time. But now I feel guilty whenever I eat there, but I feel like now I need to try the Mexican pizza because it's being resurrected.
Here's the thing about Taco Bell. Anybody listening right now, maybe you don't eat it no more, maybe you used to. You ain't never met anybody in a bad mood eating Taco Bell.
Right.
Like, that's always a good time, some good laughs amongst friends or in college. So I miss it. So, Dave, you don't seem or like you'd have Taco Bell on a regular.
Not on a regular basis.
Can you imagine him sitting in Taco Bell having his crunchy tacos? Like, I just don't see it.
I just find the most food is just the same stuff arranged differently.
Yeah, he's not much of a foodie, is he?
Why are you hating, Dave?
I'm not hating.
You're hating.
I'm just saying, you know, little fried chicken, some pea salad, I'm good.
What excites you about food?
Yeah.
Is there something that excites you? Like your guilty pleasure? I once asked him what his favorite drink is, and I was expecting him to give me like a cocktail or whatever.
What'd he say?
Root beer.
My goodness.
Root beer is good in a chilled glass.
Okay. Dave, all right. Right now, give us a food, like Colleen asked, that it gets you excited.
That gets me excited?
Yeah.
You eat it and you're kind of a monster when you eat it.
I will tell you here, my daughter bought me the monthly international snack box. Each month, I get a box full of snacks from a different country.
Almonds?
Yeah, sometimes. But this week it's Great Britain, and they've got these meat and garlic chips, which are very good.
So you've never like mowed
but
down
anyway,
on some extra guac?
That's why this segment
guac
is not about me. It's about you, G.
Yeah.
So,
it is about me, but this is my way to come on because people hit me up and say, hey, G, we love it when you ask Dave Ross questions.
What's he like?
What's he really like?
Yeah.
And these are the things you want to... When's the last time you went to McDonald's, Dave? Are you serious? No, Dave, seriously.
No, it's been a while.
You haven't had McDonald's?
Get ready. He's got grandkids now, so he'll be back there.
The last time I went, I bought the salad. Well, I didn't realize they got the salads now. I said, all right. And they'll hand them out to you through the window, too.
This man will never indulge.
Yeah. Oh,
but
no, I do.
In addition to the Mexican pizza, I want them to bring back the double-decker. That's the jam.
That was good.
A little squishy, a little crunchy.
as far as things, I was thinking about this before coming in. What are some things that I miss? And I got to go back to McDonald's, and I miss the big and tasty that they had.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that was a good one where they kind of had everything separated. You can kind of put on your tomatoes and lettuce and all that kind of stuff. It was special, and it just kind of went away. I just get mad at some items on a menu that you fall in love with. Like, and leave the McRib alone. Let the McRib be there all the time. Don't take it away.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's listened to us when they said, finally, okay,
breakfast,
you know what? Breakfast
Thank
all day.
You. I knew you were
was
going
the
there.
Greatest it thing was. Ever. The yeah. sausage McMuffin with egg is still the greatest breakfast sandwich of all time.
I'm still an
actually.
Egg
I did
McMuffin
have a breakfast
now.
Sandwich over the weekend.
Oh,
from McDonald's?
It was at the Maxwell Hotel at Seattle Center.
Okay,
and but it turned out to be a mistake.
Okay,
I asked for the, I said very clearly, but their espresso machine is so loud. I said, I want the vegan biscuit. And instead, I get the bacon biscuit.
Ooh.
And I wasn't going to change the order at that point.
So okay, so tell me your thoughts.
I had to eat it. It was the bacon is really good.
Well, wait, you seem a little happy. You see his demeanor. Dave, your demeanor
changed.
And now
that I think about it, I did last winter, we went to Crossroads and had a Dick's Deluxe at their new location.
Good for you. Okay. See, now we're starting to pull it out. We're starting to get it.
Now? Yeah, yeah.
Dang, a deluxe, too. You went straight for the big one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, did you have root beer or milk? Or did you have a shake?
No, we just drank water.
See, there's always a little bit of restraint when
they overcharge you for the soda, don't you think?
Yeah. What about Copper River salmon? Are you a type that'll spend $129 for a Copper River salmon fillet?
No, I will buy a QFC salmon fillet for $9.75.
Yeah. Wait, but I will agree with you, and still to this day, my dad used to say that all the time. Oh, you would just get water.
Yeah,
champ. They overpriced for the soda. And, well, I'm from the Midwest. He say pop. Anyways, I still to this day feel that way. Yeah. I still don't buy a soft drink from the restaurant because in my mind, I feel like they overpay.
I think the same about juice. I buy the juice frozen in cans, and then I put it in an empty Ocean Spray bottle to make it look like I bought the real thing.
Because it's just you're trying to impress.
No, I'm trying to save some money here.
Right, but like there's no other reason besides pleasing yourself by being able to open the Ocean Spray bottle. Because it's not like you've got guests in your house that want to trick into thinking you have Ocean.
It makes you feel like it's the real thing.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Dave, are you the type to switch out the regular alcohol with your premium alcohols and kind of put it in different bottles?
Alcohol?
You've lost him completely now.
Oh, okay.
Remember, his favorite drink is root beer.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Well, I have some alcohol that I use as a preservative. G is back at 9 o'clock on Cairo News Radio. Seattle's city council president is weighing in on that first-of-its-kind investigation into a dark part of American history. Federal tribal boarding schools. Here's the report from Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott.
Seattle City Council President Deborah Warer sharing highlights of the findings yesterday.
The federal Indian boarding school policy was intentionally targeted at American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian children to assimilate them and consequently take their territories and their land. I believe that this historical context is important to understanding the intent and the scale of the federal Indian boarding school system and why it persisted for over 150 years.
Juarez noting this was the first report ever to put the federal Indian boarding school system in historical context, pointing to its creation as part of a broader objective.
To dispossess Indian tribes, Alaska Native villages, and Native Hawaiians communities of their territories to support the expansion of the United States. In short, it was genocide so this country could be the United States of America. My country.
And she stressed,
this is not the past. We have boarding schools that are still here, operated not only by the federal government, by churches, and the atrocities that at least I know that my mother, my grandmother, my aunties, my uncles, and every Native person that can probably step up and speak have endured. It is not the past. It is still here.
Council President Warren is also reflecting on this weekend's Buffalo mass shooting in connection with this report.
That people were targeted, and that words and rhetoric and slogans and hate have consequences that turn into physical acts of violence. And, you know, we've seen some of that in our region, in our city. And my only hope and prayer is that that is not who we are, that at the end of the day, we all have to learn to live and love each other.
Juarez, the council's first ever indigenous president, hopes Seattle can host satellite congressional hearings on the issue so local Native American communities can share their experiences. Hannah Scott, Cairo News Radio.
On Tuesday mornings, we head to Washington, D.C., and New York Times investigative reporter David Farenthold. I don't remember a series of midterm primaries being as high profile as the ones going on in Pennsylvania. So you have a TV doctor, Dr. Oz, up against Kathy Barnett, a relative unknown but with a very compelling life story. And the Democratic side, Connor Lamb against the state's lieutenant governor, John Fetterman, who had a stroke a few days ago but says he's fine. So what do we look for today if we want to gauge, for example, the influence of Donald Trump on all this?
I think this will be an interesting test of whether Trump is the one driving the radicalization of the Republican Party, or if Trump is a shrewd follower of the radicalization of the Republican Party, or sometimes shrewd follower. The reason I say that is Trump has told everyone to vote for Dr. Oz, who doesn't really live in Pennsylvania, has no historic connections to the state. You know, it has not really been identified as a conservative in the past, but just jumped into this race. But the person who seems to have captured this sort of far right imagination is this person, Kathy Barnett, that you said. She was born to a mother who was pregnant when she was 12. But her whole sort of approach is that this sort of hard right, Proud Boys, Trump style approach, even though she doesn't have Trump's backing. So it's kind of a measure of whether voters support the sort of far right, which Trump is usually associated with, or if they support Trump wherever he goes.
And on the Dr. Oz thing, I was surprised that he got some pushback within his own party because his roots are Turkish.
Yeah, he was born in Turkey and obviously is an American citizen, lived here for many years, made his money in America. But there's been some attacks on him because he is, you know, Turkish. So that, I guess that's, if you're Dr. Oz, this is the water you swim in, right? You knew where the Republican Party is these days when you jumped into this race. And to be surprised when you get in that some people in it are nativists, some people in it don't like foreigners. I was really surprised that he was surprised.
Yeah. Okay, so if the Republicans take over Congress, as everybody seems to be predicting, we can obviously expect a bunch of investigations into the Biden administration. Now, the pool you swim in is all about following money and family connections that are awkward. Is Joe Biden vulnerable to the spate of investigations that we may be seeing?
He could be. I mean, vulnerable, I guess there's two senses of the word vulnerable. Could he be vulnerable politically? Certainly. You know, the Republicans could use these to raise more questions about Hunter Biden. You know, what Hunter Biden has done in the past, what Hunter Biden is doing now, and those could reflect poorly on Joe Biden. You know, will it reflect poorly on, or, you know, will it hurt Joe Biden in the sense that they actually find some malfeasance by Joe Biden, some attempt to profit off whatever Hunter Biden is doing? That, I think, is less likely. I don't feel like we've seen any evidence that Joe Biden has, you know, tried to take money from Hunter or through Hunter in the past, and he'd be an idiot to do it now. But who knows? I do think there's also just be a general investigation of incompetence and management by the Biden administration that could hurt them. Like, this is an administration that came in the middle of a big mess and has not been a very reform-minded administration, and not people who've gone out to say, we're going to make government work better. So I think they are vulnerable to Republicans asking, what about the border? What about this? What about that? Why isn't government working better?
But I mean, put on your investigative reporter hat. So if you were on the, you know, if you were working for one of these papers that really wants to get Hunter Biden, where would you look?
Well, I've been very little reporting on Hunter Biden. My colleagues have, though. It seems like Hunter is still out there, as crazy as it may seem, you know, trying to make money, trying to sort of make his way in business. The Times just had a story the other day about him reaching out to this sort of famous lawyer in Hollywood to help him navigate investigations and business deals. Mm-hmm. So he's still out there doing things, which is, I'm sure, not what Joe Biden wants him doing.
Yeah. Do we know how he makes his money?
In the past, it seems like he has had deals with companies overseas that paid him a lot more money than he would seem to be worth on the surface. But more than that, I don't know.
Yeah. But Joe, there's more than Hunter in the Biden family, right? Isn't there something about his brother?
His brother, Frank Biden, I think, has also, I've seen coverage, gone out there and sort of tried to play up his connections to Joe Biden in terms of getting, I forget what kind of business he's in, but whatever business he's in. Again, I don't think there's any evidence that Joe Biden has done anything to help his brother or, you know, to sort of to benefit from the contracts his brother is getting. Biden also has a daughter, Ashley. I don't see any, I haven't heard any indication that she is out there profiteering. So, you know, there could be a lot of smoke, but I can't believe Biden, after all the, you know, all the chances he's seen to see how much trouble Hunter is, that he would somehow get in, you know, involved in a backroom way with Hunter Biden.
So your prediction as an investigator, as a Pulitzer Prize winning investigator reporter, is that this is a dead end.
It's not a dead end if you're interested in Hunter Biden. I think it may be a dead end if you're interested in malfeasance by Joe Biden. And I think the Republicans, if they want to damage Biden and if they want to learn more about what's going on in the country, would probably be better suited to focus on things like the border than Hunter Biden. But, yeah, you know, who knows? They haven't taken my advice before.
Yeah. The other thing I saw is that there was a Supreme Court decision indicating, and this was a case that affected Ted Cruz, I believe.
Yeah.
He wanted to be able to use campaign funds to pay off personal loans that he made to his campaign. And the Supreme Court apparently said, go ahead. Can you explain that to me?
Well, you've always been able to do that. So a lot of candidates that are rich loan their campaign money and then later use campaign money to pay themselves back. I think Trump did this as well. But I guess before there had been a limit on how much you could do that after the election. I think it was $250,000 was the most you could pay yourself back. And I think the Supreme Court said, you know, that limit was unconstitutional. Pay yourself back as much as you loaned. So it affects rich candidates who want to loan themselves money and then use donor money to pay themselves back.
So the rules that presently stands is there's no limit on that?
Apparently not. Apparently the Supreme Court said that it was wrong to put a limit on that.
Huh. I wish I'd known about that, because when I ran for Congress, I had $5,000 left over in my campaign. I just gave it to my accountant.
Well, now you know.
Yeah,
I
could have kept it. And now I want to just get your feeling about the mood in Washington, D.C. From time to time, I still read op-ed pieces saying democracy is fragile. Democracy is in danger. It's almost like there's this lingering feeling that January 6th may happen again. Is that still a real thing in Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. I don't think January 6th would happen again quite the same way. And my bigger worry, and I think a worry of a lot of people here, is that the races that are happening this year for Secretary of State, Governor, Attorney General, you know, state legislature, that the people who get elected in a Republican wave are going to be people who, when it comes in 2024, if Republicans lose again or if the race is close, will you know, they won't need to be a January 6th because the race will have been stolen already. There will be people who believe that they will be saving the election, but they'll actually be stealing it for their party. Obviously, there are people in the Secretary of State, governor positions, Attorney General positions, Republicans and Democrats who held the line against Trump's enormous pressure in 2020. And I do worry that we're electing, you know, that people will be elected this fall who will, you know, not need to be pressured or who will give in to that pressure and make it easier to steal an election without violence.
David Farenthold from the New York Times. David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Choke Points, let's go. Brought to you by Acton's Quality Roofing. Let's go. We don't seem to be hearing about it as much, but the numbers show that catalytic converter theft is still a big problem, despite that new state law intended to stop it. Current News Radio's Mickey Gomez is here to tell us about a plan to address the issue on the national level.
Catalytic converter theft remains steady in Washington and across the nation. It's because of the precious metals, platinum, palladium, and rhodium, that makes it a hot item. Rhodium's market value is around $16,000 an ounce. And although Washington already has a new law to stamp out catalytic converter theft, some lawmakers believe that it's not going to do enough. Indiana Congressman Jim Baird says cat converter theft in his state is on the rise, and it's time to get tough. So he introduced the PART Act, which stands for Preventing Auto Recycling Thefts. Baird says law enforcement input was an important piece to the PART Act.
And we had some of our law enforcement officers share their concerns about these catalytic converter thefts that was on a major increase because of the metals. You know, there's precious metals in those.
I asked him why it's been so hard to prosecute catalytic converter theft, and he says,
even if they followed a pickup load of catalytic converters to a scrapyard or to some intermediary, there wasn't anything they could do.
Which is why the PART Act is different than other laws.
And the idea is simply to try to be able to tie those catalytic converters through some kind of identification number, whether it's the VIN number or whatever, and stamp that right on the catalytic converter and make sure that the law enforcement then has an opportunity or can take corrective action.
But does the PART Act have support from the auto industry?
We've been endorsed by the Major Cities Chiefs Association, the National Independent Automobile Dealers Association, the Institute for Scrap Metal Recycling Industries, the National Insurance Crime Bureau, the American Car Rental Association, the National Automatic Merchandising Association, and NAFA, the Fleet Management Association.
And what about bipartisan support?
Absolutely. I think that's where this works better. And we currently have 11 bipartisan co-sponsors.
I asked Congressman Baird if he's confident the bill will pass.
I am very optimistic at this point that we will have, because this bill doesn't have any real consequences other than just trying to help law enforcement as well as help automobile owners, or not just automobiles, but vehicle owners. And so I'm very optimistic about where this will go.
He tells us the PART Act is in a holding pattern as he and his supporters wait on committees to take up the bill or help get it to the floor for a vote. Mickey Gomez, Cairo News Radio.
You can ring my bell. Ring the bell.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. And here is Rachel Bell to explain the expanding role of the corporate chief happiness officer.
Yes, this is a real title.
I thought you were the one. I thought you were the chief happiness officer.
Oh, my God, that's very nice. But no, I was going to say later when I'm talking about this that, I'll explain it first and I'll tell you then why I am not the chief happiness officer. So basically, companies now are either hiring someone or converting a role into this chief happiness officer. And they don't know exactly how many people do it, but on LinkedIn, 65% more people are using this as their title compared to 2 years ago. So more people. Colleen's making a face and I love it, because here at Cairo, we have something called the Task Force of Fun. And both of these names just give me these feelings that I felt in high school. This is why I wouldn't be the chief happiness officer. I went to high school in the 90s, which was the time of slackers, where we were so disinterested in school spirit that at my school, at least, so many people cut the rallies, they just canceled them. So I've always been kind of like, you know, like a 90s stoner slacker minus the marijuana of just like school spirit. Like, yes, I love fun, but there's something about like forced fun. Have fun with the people that you want to have fun with. That just makes me feel like,
you know,
real
if they
snarky.
Use that jingle, that'd be great.
You know what? Maybe I am the chief happiness officer.
I agree. I feel like fun should be spontaneous. And when a company goes, hey, on Friday at 2 o'clock, we're going to have fun.
Yeah.
Like, what if I'm not in the mood to have fun at 2 o'clock?
Pack your smiles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess they mentioned in this Wall Street Journal article that McDonald's in 2003 was the first to use the term chief happiness officer when they promoted Ronald McDonald to that role. So a lot of people still get this kind of whiff, as they put it, of French fries and clownishness. But what they do, these are the people who are bringing in the beer to the office on Friday. And by the way, what we do in this office is nothing like what most people in Seattle in the tech world do. I have a few friends in that world, and they're always telling me what it's like. And I'm like, this is a completely different world. You know, they get free lunch, free breakfast. Mm-hmm. They have these happy hours. They're bringing in Pilates teachers. I mean, such a different world, which is maybe why I'm such a skeptic, because I'm like, I've never had this fun.
Seriously.
What is this fun?
Maybe if they participated in the brand of fun that we liked, we would get on board with this. But yeah, I remember during the pandemic, to like boost the spirits of my husband's, you know, workplace employees, is they would give like whiskey flight tastings over a Zoom menu, or a chocolate tasting with Theo Chocolate and a virtual tour of the factory. Like, not like, I don't know. I feel like most offices that aren't part of the tech world, they're doing fun things like, here, eat my grandma's crock pot recipe. And you're like, I don't know if I want to sit on the toilet tonight.
Well, a question of your husband's company. Are they doing that during work hours, or is this after work?
After.
See, that's the thing is, I don't want to do this after. I want to do my own life after work. But I will say that maybe, you know, I'm in the minority here, because at Ernst & Young, they have been trying different methods. And this sounds a little extreme, but every single week they survey employees. How happy are you? 1 to 10, fill it out. And then they go, oh God, it's up. Oh God, it's down. But they said that they surveyed 5,000 workers in the US and in 4 other countries. And they found that 82% of people reported that they have been or are lonely in their jobs. So, you know, maybe a lot of these people do want to do a coffee flight after work because they don't have anything else to do, which I'm not making fun of it all. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there, and especially during the pandemic, if you're living by yourself and you're really isolating, that totally makes sense. But yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's an employee's market. People are asking for more money and getting it. People are asking for flexible schedules and getting it at these tech companies, I will add.
I was going to say, are they getting those raises? Because I have a surefire way of making your employees happy all the time.
That's what I was
saying. Every month, hand out $20 bills or give people raises that match the cost of living. Like, you want happy
Colleen,
employees.
You're always about the money.
Pay them.
You know, this is actually not a representative group, though, because we get paid for talking with each other, right?
Don't make it sound that easy, Dave.
Okay,
but
sorry.
We don't get paid. Well, I don't get paid like
for
tech people get paid.
Talking
though.
Effectively with each other. Yeah. But I mean, a lot of tech people, if you're a programmer, that can be very solitary. You're sitting there, you know, if you're on a programming binge, you've got inspiration, you don't want to be distracted. You're there for hours.
No, that's true. Like my husband, Chris, like he was so excited to log on at like 5:30 and do the whiskey tasting. And they were laughing and having a good time. Because I think that's true. When you're sitting in front of a computer, you want to get to know your coworkers, but can't. Yeah. So these offer opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I guess it's not a black and white world. It's for some people, not everybody. But yeah, my first thought is, you know, I don't need your Pilates during work. I just want, you know, a raise and the flexible benefits. But I think the thing is that a lot of these people already have that. And so now it's like, well, we have to do more. And I have to say, I have a couple friends who work in tech locally. And I think just like anything in life, you get used to what you have. So I'll hear them complain about things. I'm like, oh my God. Well, the food in the cafeteria isn't organic. I wrote a note. I put a little note in the box and they replied and they said, we're not prioritizing that. And I'm going, oh my God, we'd be so lucky if we had, you know, free food. So I think you get used to having free lunch, free breakfast, and you want more and you want more. So I think people are just becoming harder to please. And these are people that are making really good money.
Around here, if you want to make everybody happy, box of donuts.
Yeah, that's
true.
Oh, can I complain? I always want bagels. I want the other round food.
All right. Box of bagels just for Rachel.
Bagels, the other round food.
Rachel Bell. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you will never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.